I guess I'm going to let him explain it. But I know they make punch trackers. They have a bag. They have a new program called Fight Camp. We have a lot to talk about here today, man, and I'm excited to have him on and explain a little bit about this. Beeb, I'm like you, where I like to, you know, I like technology. You know, I like gadgets. I like goofy things. And any time that I can integrate a gadget into my workout, I love it. Are you the same way?
Absolutely. I feel like Iron Man from the Avengers. I like gadgets too.
The man from the Avengers. So Tommy's on the line right now. And Tommy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your product? Tell us a little bit about Fight Camp and all that other good stuff here.
Yeah, for sure. So let me start with the punch trackers. So we developed those going way back. The development on those started in 2014 with my co-founder Alex and my co-founder Khalil. They were working sort of alongside the Canadian Olympic team. Khalil, who's the current CEO, was going to a boxing gym, but he was also sort of studying engineering at a master's program at the University of Toronto. And like any engineer, he wants to figure out how he can hack his way to better training and sort of like, you know, found his way to this, like you said, this Iron Man-like tool, which was the punch trackers. And now when we connected way back in 2015, you're talking these were just like very like rough, handmade prototypes. You could see the electronics straight through the silicone. They were, you know, real big and clunky, the kind of thing you would never wear in training, but they worked, which was, to me, it was very impressive. And he convinced me to join the founding team at that point in time. Basically what they do, you strap them under your wrist, you put them under your hand wraps, and they measure all your hand movement in three-dimensional space, 1,000 times per second. And what we're able to do with all that raw data is tell you things like how many punches you threw, what kind of punch you threw, what the max velocity of that punch was and the intensity. And maybe more impressively, we're able to like do this really well where we get rid of all the junk data. So when you're doing jumping jacks or when somebody punches your hand, those things, they're not getting counted as false positives. So, you know, really a tool for boxers in training to better quantify their training.
That's interesting. So, and that's the other thing I read. So when you throw a punch, it tracks the punch. And,
right.
But when you block or you parry or you, you know, you move, you feint, anything like that typically doesn't get tracked, correct?
Right. It doesn't get registered. And that was a really, really difficult thing for us to do. We accomplished that with, you know, machine learning, if you're familiar. If you've ever seen The Terminator, you're familiar with machine learning. It's artificial intelligence, right? So basically what you do is you take tens of thousands of data points and you train a system to say, when this motion happens, you count that as a punch. When this motion happens, this is not a punch. So really just using tens of thousands of what we'd call target motions to train the system, thousands of non-target motions to teach the system that, hey, when this happens, this is not a punch. Don't register it as a punch.
That's crazy. So Now you have like two products, correct? Or no? Or am I misunderstanding that?
So we started with IXO, which was the just the punch trackers, and we sold that into the elite athlete market. And, you know, you're talking anybody from, you know, we hear different names just all the time from Anthony Joshua. I personally saw Vasyl Lomachenko using them in camp, and now we're sort of in contact with his team. But really the best of the best fighters in the world were using this as a training tool, which was great, right? But just as a business, our way for us to reach sort of more people, that critical fitness mass, was to, we like to say, like, give people an actual real use case for the data and for the product. So people who aren't, you know, super serious professional fighters. And the way we did that was with developing Fight Camp, which is pretty much it's a entire fully equipped boxing gym that you put in your home. It's everything from the equipment that you need to the trainers and the classes. We film with Fight Camp 4 new workouts per week, led by all people who were, you know, actual real fighters with decades of training experience. And these workouts are streamed directly into the home. They're interactive. So it's the kind of class that you get if you went to a real boxing gym, a gym where there's fighters, but there's also, you know, a lot of fitness participants and they run these bagged classes, these really difficult, awesome workouts. Those workouts are being streamed directly into your home. And this is nationwide right now.
Oh my goodness. So it's like a I know like the Peloton or like the Nordic Tracks, how they have the videos on there for like cycling and stuff like that. This is one for like boxing, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, we've been compared to Peloton a lot, and which is it's definitely flattering. But I like to say this is a much much tougher workout than hopping on a bike. As you guys know, boxing and throwing punches, the full body engages everything from the legs through the core to the arms. So yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, so when you talk about this now, I know like if you already have a pair of these fight, the Hixo trackers, okay, can I can I just buy a bag and do it on that, or what's the? I mean, can I buy the workout or whatever? I mean, can we stream it alone and just do the workout, or do we have to buy like the whole package, or how does it work?
No, that's a great question. So we sell the gym by itself. But we also have what we call a Connect package that just sells the Fight Camp trackers, which are actually different from the Hixo trackers. They're programmed a little bit differently. And when you have the Fight Camp trackers, you can use your own bag if you'd like, and your own gloves and whatever other equipment that you have to do the workouts.
Gotcha. So, and the other thing too is like if you get the Fight Camp package, can you also just can you have the gloves and you have the sensors and everything? I can go to any bag and hit it, correct? Or does it have to be on that particular bag? Is it connected to that bag?
Absolutely. You can hit any bag with the, as long as you have the punch trackers, you're good to go. You're good to get a great workout with Fight Camp.
That's amazing. So, all right, let me ask you this. So when you have these, I guess it measures obviously your punch count. Okay.
Yeah.
It measures your punch count. What else does it measure? Does it measure how hard you hit?
So it measures the max velocity of every single punch, which correlates to your punching power. It doesn't perfectly measure pounds per square inch. In order to do that, you need something on the other end, like a force plate, so that you can properly calculate effective mass. But, you know, by calculating the max velocity, you're getting super close. We have a score that tells the Fight Camp users really how hard they're working. This is something that the professional fighters use as well. It's our intensity score, or output is what we call it in Fight Camp. And really it's just looking at how many punches that you are throwing per unit of time and how like hard and fast those punches are being thrown. It gives you the score that's based on how hard you're working.
Wow. All right. So in like on the app, because you have an app that goes with it, correct? Because it's all measured – this all correlates with like a phone and everything like that, like your iPhone or Droid or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for Fight Camp, we have an iOS app, so you can use Fight Camp with any iOS device, iPad. But most of our users, they stream it directly to a TV in their home. So this has, you know, there's you know, old dusty heavy bags hanging all across the United States, as you know, just sitting in garages. And just hanging there, right? This gives new life to all of those tens of thousands, not millions of heavy bags hanging in garages all across the United States of America. You throw a TV next to it. Now you have a full boxing gym directly in your home. You get that same workout that you get in the gym right in your garage.
Right. And like, you know, and you said like professionals teach a class, you have like four new classes each week. And they're all like, I mean, these are all like brand new classes. I mean, this just keeps going and going, correct?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we're going to double that pace actually very soon. That's going to become eight within the next couple of months.
Wow.
Yeah. And our classes, importantly, our classes, they range from 4 rounds to 8 rounds to 10 rounds. So no matter what your fitness level is coming in, or, you know, no matter if you only have 15 minutes to get a workout in before work, you can hop in and do a 4-rounder and you can go to bed happy that night, as we say. Or if you have time, you can do a full 10-rounder. And then they also vary by level. So if you're coming in for the first time, you've never boxed before, like, you know, a lot of people that walk into that boxing gym for the first time, they've never done it before. They're just looking for, you know, a kick-ass workout. We have beginner-level workouts. We also have an entire path, a beginner's path, that we call the prospect path, that teaches the proper boxing technique. While also sort of serving you workouts that are appropriate to the level that you're at in your boxing journey. And so we have beginner level classes, we have intermediate level, and we have, we call advanced level. And what you see with each step up in the level is the combination complexity jumps up a little bit for the user. So that, you're challenged no matter what level you're at. And you also, if you come in not knowing much, you have something to aspire to.
I think that was my next question, and you just hit it. Because a lot of people out there, who listen or anything like that, a lot of people think they can fight. A lot of people think they can box until they actually walk in there and put on gloves. And you guys actually take them through, hey, this is a jab. This is how you throw the jab, and this is where your feet should be. You step when you throw the jab, that kind of thing. All that stuff is gone over?
Yeah, we do. It's something that we actually take very, very seriously. Given, just ourselves coming from the sport, to me, boxing is a sport has a lot of history. People put their lives on the line for it, so we wanted to make sure that we built Fight Camp in a way that really respected the sport, really teaching the technique and getting better at that as we go on, making the product better so that it better caters to people who are beginners and better teaches them the technique is something that's been important to us from the beginning. So we teach it via tutorial videos that are led by myself. I'm a former U.S. national champion, U.S. national team member, 136 fights. Also have over 15 years of experience as a trainer. I lead the entire series on the technique. And then our six trainers, they're all people who have fought competitively. They're very, very adamant about maintaining proper technique, even as they're delivering these high-impact classes. They're always, always falling back on how to throw the punches properly so that that doesn't get lost in the mix.
That's amazing.
Now, Tommy, I got a question. I got a question about the punch counter device. How accurate is that? How accurate is it? Is there a margin for error, just like there is for the punch stats that they have in boxing? Those guys actually counting the punches. When you compare the device to people actually counting and hitting the clickers, what is the accuracy?
So the accuracy we've measured it is we'd say it's much better, right? But there's always going to be that margin of error. And what I've found is that it's more due to difficulty in classifying certain things. So what we've found difficulty in is say you want to say that this many left hooks were thrown compared to this many left uppercuts. There's sort of a gray area in between there where like something is half between a hook and halfway between an uppercut, and Joe, you might call it an uppercut. Eric might call it a hook, and CompuBox might call it something else. So we have to sort of draw that line there in the technology. But we've also found that people would disagree that something should be classified as a hook rather than an uppercut. A good example is you look at the way Mickey Ward would drill that left hook into the body and throw it at that 45-degree angle. And everybody would talk about how great Mickey Ward's left hook to the body was. But when you look at it and you look at the trajectory it takes, it's almost an uppercut.
Yeah, it's 45.
Right? So if you really,
call him 45s in the gym, so it's like a hybrid punch, basically.
Right, and and you call him 45. Yeah, so you see the difficulty there in classifying some of the punches on the tech side. But, man, you guys would be impressed. I ought to send you a pair. You'd be impressed with the accuracy for sure.
Send me a pair so I can practice on Eric.
Forget about Beef. Send me a pair. Don't worry about him.
Listen to that Boston accent. I feel like I'm home right now, Jeff.
I love it. So in terms of actually counting the punches, do you have to take the glove off and look at the device to get the actual number? I misunderstood. I wasn't sure if you said that the device was the device hooked up to an app as well, and that's how you get the count, or would you have to take the glove off and that's like, okay, so that's how works. Okay.
Yeah, the device communicates via Bluetooth, and all the stats are displayed in real time. So you throw a punch, it's counted on the app immediately.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
That's incredible. So let me ask you this: have you been approached by any commissions or anything, or any professional boxing people to maybe use these instead of having the punch count people? Is that something that you try to market, or would you consider marketing, or is that something that you're not really interested in? You're just interested in the training aspect more so than having these devices be used during fights.
Boy, that would be awesome, wouldn't it? So
yeah, I think it'd be great.
The answer to that is yes, but right. So athletic commissions, as you know, that's a totally different animal. The promotions are definitely interested in the stats. especially broadcast too, right? Because now you have this enhanced layer of stats in real time on screen. You have announcers can talk about this thing. It just really enhances the experience for the viewers. And also it's like it takes the burden off of a human, right? So I think, you know, a lot of people will call into question the CompuBox stats a lot of times because they know it's a human pressing a button. But when you have technology, you know, I think people can trust and think that it's a little bit more reliable. So we've spoken to, I mean, name the organization and the promoter and the TV channel. We've spoken to them, right? When we first started out, we thought that that was going to be the way that, you know, we monetize this and turn this into a business. But, man, you know, we found that it was just very, very difficult to get approval from all the parties involved, the athletic commission, you know, everything else. And it's something that we ended up sort of abandoning ship on temporarily, I'd say, so that we could, you know, build a business around this. Now, longer term, still really, really interested in being able to be the stats provider for professional fight sports, right, for boxing and mixed martial arts. But I think when we do it, it would be less about the money and more about, you know, the passion, the novelty of it, yeah, just because we love it. So
now people can say what they want about the sport of boxing, but what I've noticed is, you know, I'm actually talking to this girl right now. She has a daughter. She's kind of special needs. And she actually takes her to boxing, like boxing workout classes, which is a beautiful thing for young people to get in shape. So what I've noticed is a lot of people, a lot of young people, you know, even adults, are turning to boxing, not because for the violence of it, not because of the science of the violence, but actually they're looking to get in shape. Now, is that something that would you look to sell this program or market this program to specific gyms, like maybe an LA Fitness or something, like gyms that do aerobics classes? Is that something that you've also been looking at, and would that be something that you'd be considering down the line?
So gyms could be interesting down the line, but as of right now, we're focused solely on the at-home market, and
okay,
we found a huge, huge white space in the at-home market. I'd say about 60% of our user base right now is 35-plus female. So either really busy moms or working moms that, you know, don't have enough time to get to the gym or enough time to get to the gym as much as they'd like. And they're inspired by these, you know, these boxing workouts. As we know, boxing is becoming increasingly popular among women. You have, you know, obviously that last several crops at the Olympics of the first ever females that fought in the Olympics, you know,
yeah,
Marlon Esparza and Clarissa and Michaela Mayer and all these girls. So you have that movement. And you mix that with the fact that all the Vicks have really made boxing fitness popular among women, and it's exploded, really, the popularity of boxing for fitness among women. Really interesting.
So I didn't understand what you said earlier. Is it like a DVD or something that people buy and it gets shipped to the house? Is that how this works?
It's an app. In the workout.
Oh, just an app? Just an app? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's app-based as well, too. Okay.
The DVD aspect, that's sort of like an old-school aspect. If you think back in the times like Billy Blanks and Ty Bo, it was the DVD-based workouts. What having streaming does, you know, the big advantage of streaming is that allows us to have this library that we continuously update literally forever. Four new classes,
yeah,
as of right now.
Yeah.
Or four new pieces of content added every single week rather than having to buy a new DVD every several months. And pretty soon, eight new a week.
That makes a ton of sense now that you say that. That's an outstanding point. That's genius, by the way. That's genius. I give you credit for that.
Oh, thank you.
So the beautiful thing, too, is, like you said, they can use a smart TV. They can Chromecast it. They can Apple TV it, too, if they wanted to. So that's incredible. That's incredible. All right. You have any more questions for
Merrick? I tell you what, I'm blown away by this whole concept. I really am. It's one of those things that, like, again, man, we always talk about this in boxing, and we're always like, you feel like old school. We go in and we hit a bag or whatever. I was so excited when the app came out of my phone for a timer, for like a ring timer, so that I can do rounds and time it for three
right.
minutes and everything. That was so awesome to me.
I remember those.
Yeah, you know, and this is just something else where, like I said, it counts your, you know, it counts your punches. It gives you other feedback, intensity feedback, and all that other good stuff. I mean, this is just one amazing product, man. It really is.
You're going to get this.
For sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys. 100%. Yeah, yeah. We got to get this in your hands for sure. I can't wait to have you guys working out with us.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. That'd be great.
Insane, man.
For sure.
Insane.
Hey, guys. I have a couple of predictions I'd like to throw out there since there's a boxing talk radio right here.
Absolutely.
Two friends. One of them from the Boston area, so I'm sure Joe's familiar with him. Rashidi Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good friend of mine.
Showbox.
One of the first users of the punch trackers, by the way. I'll send you a video of him using them way back when they were still prototypes.
World champion
in 2 years. And he needs to get some more coverage. And I think Jamel Herring, another good friend of mine.
Yeah. Love Jamel Herring.
Yeah, I fought him. That's who I fought in the Olympic trials. World champion in his next fight. He's fighting the kid from Japan. So you heard it here first.
I think awesome. So. I think that's a very good pick, man. I think Jamel's the goods, man. He's a great, great fighter. Really is.
Smooth. Very smooth.
Very much. I've seen him fight on quite a few occasions. So, all right, Tommy. Sure. Thank you so much for coming on, man. We appreciate your time. And
anytime, guys.
Absolutely, man. We'll talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I always do that. I always like cut
buddy,
people off on like.
Buddy, ever since Coach D has been rattling you, you've been a little
Coach
jumpy.
Coach D has not been rattling.
You've been a little jumpy because of those Coach D beatings, right? You've never been
Coach
the same.
D beatings.
You've never
Coach
been the same.
D beatings.
You're a little bit itchy with that trigger finger. Take it easy. Take it easy, buddy. Please.
Coach C with the beating. Come on. Come on.
Coach C is wearing you out like a 20-year-old mattress.
I beat Coach C like a rented mule. What are you talking about?
Please.
What's the matter with you?
Coach C's beating you up like a 57 Chevy. That was a good one.
That doesn't make any sense. What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Old car, beat up. You know, a lot of miles.
You got a lot of miles.
I actually do. I can show you some MRIs, for Christ's sakes. I got torn every goddamn joint in my body, for Christ's sakes.
Corey Lee Boxing in the chat. Salute. The Functopus. Salute. Notorious BC as usual. Salute. Given Quality for Life, salute. Hamed 92, salute. Matthew Thompson, salute. Thank you, guys. Yeah, absolutely, man.
No.
I hope you guys enjoyed that, man. What a product that is, man. Seriously. I mean, that's something else, man. I tell you what. It takes things to the next. And it makes it fun. That's the other thing, too, is that I think that negates everything else, is it makes it fun. Yeah.
So what's the name of the company? It's called Fight Camp?
Fight Camp. If you go to shop, and let's see here. Hang on 1 second. I can put that up, and I think it's just shophixo.com, if I'm not mistaken here. Let me double check, and I'll go ahead and put that up. Yep, that's it. Hang on 1 second, I'll put it up.
That was real interesting, the whole thing.
It really was, man.
You know?
It really was. It was different, man. It's different, you know? All right, there we go. HTTP shop.hixo.com, and then that'll get you there. There we go. Yeah, shophixo.com. And then that'll get you to, like, for the fight camp stuff, and that'll also get you to the, I guess, the sensors and everything like that.
Shophixo.com. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're a very cool product. Very cool stuff, man. All right, so let's switch gears here. Let's talk about this. The WBC ordered David Benavidez and Anthony Durrell. It's been ordered by the WBC. You know, what does this mean? It doesn't mean much, kind of, okay? So when the WBC, when they order a fight, again, you know my feeling on this. It doesn't really mean anything. Promoters got to agree on it and everything like that. The good thing, they're both PBC fighters. So this fight will 99% most likely happen next. So David Benavidez and Anthony Durrell will probably fight next. Now, I'm hearing that from what I read that Ivani Yildirim
gets the winner. Yeah.
Gets the winner. Yeah, instead of an immediate rematch, which I think is fair.
I think it's fair.
Listen.
I think Well, wasn't David Bennett?
You had a shot. You just got a shot. Now, yeah. Whether you won or lost, you had the shot.
Yeah.
Now it's his turn, man. And
yeah,
you get the. I get that.
Was David Benavidez the champion emeritus?
Well, no, he was suspended. Wasn't he suspended on a drug thing or something like that?
Yeah, so he couldn't have been a champion emeritus because he'd have to go out like a retirement, like or something like that. Yeah, you'd have to go out in an honorable way. Without, you know, I'm not saying that David Benavidez is not an honorable person, but
sure.
He did something that was kind of egregious. So,
but didn't he cop to it though? He copped to it.
Oh yeah,
he apologized and everything like that.
And shout out to him.
The program that they asked him to, you know, without question, he entered the program and the rehabilitation or whatever it was. He moved out of the environment that he was in. So he took great steps to correct the situation and to make sure it doesn't happen again. But again, you know, he's a young kid. He can only learn from this, David Benavidez. And you know what? I think David Benavidez and Callum Smith, like they're like 1A and 1B. In my opinion, in this division, I think they're the two most talented fighters. No disrespect to Caleb Plant, but I think David Benavidez is just more experienced, I think. And also, I think he's just a little bit more gifted than Caleb Plant. Not that Caleb Plant's not gifted, but he's a heavier hitter. He seems quicker, a little bit more better with the movement, a little bit more elusive. You know what I'm saying? He seems to be more physically imposing. Has a great work rate in there. The conditioning is great. So he seems to have a more difficult style along with the athleticism and explosiveness that he possesses. I think he's more of a handful than Caleb Plant is. But that's not to say Caleb Plant's not a wonderful fighter as well. But I think him and Callum Smith would be 1A and 1B. And I'd actually probably pick Benavidez over Callum Smith. I just think he's a little bit more athletic, a little quicker. Probably beat him to the punch, you know. So I think that would be an outstanding fight. Will we ever see it? Probably not because of the networks. But that would be a great fight. But so I don't know the situation. Like they could order it, but what is David Benavidez ranked? I mean, this is what the WBC does. They order fights. Like they ordered Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, but Tyson Fury was ranked number two. Jillian Rate was ranked number one, and Dominic Brazil was the mandatory. So, I mean, that's just like ordering a friggin' Happy Meal at McDonald's. What difference does it friggin' make? You know what I'm saying? You can order anything you want.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing about the WBC or when any of the sanctioning bodies order a fight. Doesn't mean anything. I mean, really, I mean, this makes the most sense because they're both under the same promotion.
Yeah, but you think Darrell's
same manager?
You think Darrell will take this fight if he doesn't have to take it? Because if he says no, will they strip him? What does it mean when you order something like and it's the guy's not officially a mandatory, and they can't make the fight? What's going to happen? Are they threatening to strip him if the fight doesn't go off?
Well, what will happen is then it goes to like a purse bid. That kind of thing, and if you remember the Kovalev, Adonis Stevenson situation?
Yeah.
So he was the mandatory. Kovalev said he was a mandatory, and they said, yeah, you're going to fight him next. So they ordered the fight, and so the fight went to purse bid. And then main events lost the purse bid, which is Kovalev's team, and he said, we're not fighting because we're contracted to HBO at the time, and we can't do the fight. And so that it just kind of fell apart. So it doesn't matter. And a lot of times, if it does, and I may be mistaken, but I think I'm at least in the ballpark. Champion will get 75% if it goes to purse bid. Champion gets 75%. Challenger gets 25%.
Yeah, but
that's why they don't. You know, that's why they try to figure it out beforehand.
But isn't that? Well, I think you're right because weren't they threatening to do the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder purse bid thing too? So I was gonna say I thought that was just for mandatories, but it could be for fights that are ordered as well. I think you're right there because I think.
But I think could they order a fight that's not? I mean, well, I guess they can order box offs. They can order
Fury Wilder was ordered, and this is what happened. Fury said no, but he still held on to his number two ranking. In the WBC, so
that's what makes no sense.
So what was the punitive, you know, result of him saying no?
Right.
Nothing. So it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Like, what is the repercussions of saying no when something is ordered?
Right.
What is it? You got to go in the corner and take for a timeout? I mean, what is it?
Yeah, you get nothing. I mean, there's no real repercussions. Like I said, and when the WBA orders the fights or WBC orders the fights, like I said, I mean, hey, I want to see those fights. I mean, hey, they order. I mean, let's be honest, man. They order a lot of good fights.
I mean, no disrespect to Tyson Fury. They ordered the fight. He said no. They should at least drop him down a few spots in the rankings because he said no, right? Would that make sense?
I would think so. I mean, that makes sense to me. If if you refuse a fight, you know, we're asking you to fight for the number one contender or whatever the case may be. If you refuse that fight, then, hey, if we got to go down to number five to find a guy who's going to fight, then we bring him up. And then now he's ranked number three and then so on and so forth. But, you know, if your top-ranked guys are just, hey, I don't want to fight, you know, what do? You know, it's a tough thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, I mean, so let's assume that fight comes off because that's a very, very easy fight to make. Again, both of them under the same umbrella promotionally and everything like that. Promotion, management, everything. They're all under the same umbrella. So that fight is definitely going to come off. What do you think? I mean, is there any way that you see Durrell getting by Benavidez?
No. He's been squeaking by. Even when he was on top of his game, he was squeaking by. You know, so I think it's going to be a tall task for him. He's starting to show some signs of slippage. He's getting hit an awful lot more. Still can punch a bit, but not. I mean, he just doesn't bring the heat like he used to. I think there's a lot of fire that's been kind of taken off of him right now. I don't think he's got that same fire, that same spark as a fighter. And I'm not saying whether it's desire or what have you. He's in his mid-30s. He's going to be 36 pretty soon, I think. Or is he 36 now?
I think he's 34, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
I think his
brother's 35. He's 34.
Yeah, well, I think he's starting to turn the corner a little bit. He's
100%.
He's on exiting his prime, so to speak, right now. So.
Well, you can definitely see it. I mean, you can definitely see I don't want to say a slowdown, but for lack of a better term, slowdown.
Yeah.
From where he was, you know, you take him 5 years ago. You don't get better unless you're coming up. I mean, so you take the prime of his career maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, until now, he's not going to get better during that time. He's already peaked.
Well, he's never been a defensive specialist. He's never been a slick boxer. He's a grinder. He likes to get inside and grind it out with guys, wear them down.
And what's he going to do with that height? What's he going to do with that height?
He's not going to be able to grind David Benavidez down, who's going to constantly be stepping around him and turning him, right?
Right.
And after he turns him, he's going to meet him with a heavy-handed punch, you know? Right. So it's a tough one. I can't see him winning the fight. I think he loses badly. I'm curious to see, to be perfectly honest with you, if they actually go through with that fight and take it.
I think they will.
Yeah.
I think they'll
okay.
take it. Yeah, I think the fight happens. Because I think he wants one more fight, and I think he's going to call it a day. I mean, that's just my personal feeling on it.
Win, lose, or draw, or one more loss and he's done?
I think if he loses, he's done.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think he calls it a day. Now, if he wins, I don't know how he feels about that. But
Depends how he looks and how he comes out of the fight, too.
It's such a tall order. I mean, man, I tell you what, it's such a tall order.
No, it's a tough fight.
Fighting Benavidez, man. I mean, that's for anybody.
That's a very tough fight. That's not an easy fight.
No, not even a little bit. I tell you what I think, like, you know, in Caleb Plant, and we talked about, like, you know, we had Benavidez and Callum Smith as the top, like the upper echelon in that division.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Caleb Plant, I think, is close. Now, whether he's right there or not, that I don't know. But I think the thing that makes him so dangerous is his ability. He's such a clean boxer. You know what I mean? He's smooth. He can fight. He can, you know, he's a very, very good boxer. That's what makes him dangerous.
Tough fight against Uzkataki, though. Uzkataki came on strong,
yeah.
No?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the kind of thing you think about, you know, does he, you know, when it comes to the later rounds, you know, I mean, if, yeah. if some grinding on him and stuff like that, I mean, but he's so, he is smooth. I mean, he's a very slick boxer, man. And yeah. those guys can always come up with a plan. If you can box and do the basics, you can always come up with a plan and give the other guy fits or make him look bad, you know.
He's a good fighter. He's a good fighter.
Yeah. Yeah, so that I would be real interested in see. I'd like to see actually. I'd like to see Plant versus Benavidez before because I mean, like I said, man, I don't know that it's hard saying that the Durrell fight won't be. It won't be as competitive to me anyway. I don't believe that it may be as competitive as he would. You know, we would want it to be. Put it that way.
No, I agree.
You know. Yeah, it's just one of those things, man. It's tough. That's a tough out, man. David Benavidez is a good fighter. Do you think? I mean, and we talked about touching on Callum Smith. That's a fight that actually, I mean, could that happen, or is it just?
It's up to Eddie Hearn. It's up to Eddie Hearn. See what he can do.
Yeah, that's code for no chance, huh?
Well, I mean, will they allow? I know they're talking about allowing Anthony Joshua to fight off the zone. Maurice Hooker, he fought off the zone, and he's been off the zone, back on the zone, so that'll be up to Eddie. I mean, some of those guys have fought on the zone, and they fought off the zone, you know, so.
Yeah. Does he have a contract? Is it known? Does Joshua have a contract with the zone?
No. He's a fight to fight.
That's what I thought, too. So he can fight wherever.
It's first
he's
and
like
last.
Wilder. After the Showtime fight, he can fight wherever.
The thing is this, though. If they shop Joshua around and say Showtime or whoever it is makes the offer to Joshua, DAZN has the right of last rights refusal. So if DAZN matches whatever the offer is, then they have to fight. Then he has to fight on DAZN. But say Showtime decides that we're going to make this monumental, astronomical offer, then DAZN says we're not going to counter it. We're going to let you take it. Then Joshua can fight on Showtime. So that's what first and last rights refusal are. They have the right to make the first offer, and then he can shop around. And if they come up with a better offer or whatever, then, you know, that's why Eddie Hearn says whoever comes up with the most money gets the fight. You've heard him say that, right?
Yeah.
That's why. That's first and last rights. That's what first and last rights refusal means. So if you have a first and last rights refusal, they do it in music all the time, like artists signed to labels. And a lot of artists have first and last right refusal. So they can shop around, but they have to go back to the label and say, this is the deal I have on the table. Can you match it? If the company matches it, the record company matches it, then they have to give the album to the record company. That's how it works. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, man. This is why, you know, and we talked about this before, and we talked about like that UFC model.
Yeah.
And there are other, you know, there are other organizations out there, but by and large, like your average fan, your average guy, doesn't really know who's in ONE Fighting Championships. You know what I mean? He doesn't know that, you know. So the UFC has got all these fighters under the same banner, and if you want to see a fight, it's probably going to happen. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. And that's why I wish that's how I wish boxing was, you know, and there wasn't all this turmoil and everything like that. And we could just see the fights that we want to see. And that's what ruins it.
Well, even in the UFC, some fights still don't happen, but then again,
sure, but
he can shelve guys and there's more, you know, it's more of an incentive to fight when you're offered a fight, because if you don't fight, you're not going to get a fight elsewhere, you know?
Right. Yeah, whereas, that's the thing. That's a very good point, too, is, I mean, in a lot of ways, they're the only game in town.
Yeah. And Al Haymon allows guys to turn down fights, and he still gets them fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas Bob Arum, you can say what you want about Arum, but if he offers you a fight and you don't take it, if it's a great fight, it's a fight that he really wants to make, and you don't take it as a fighter, he'll shelve you. He's shelved several fighters, Mikey Garcia, Nonito Donaire, you know?
Yeah.
All the fighters have been shelved before over there.
you know, I mean, you think about it though. Like, I mean, is that, you know, that's, I mean, for the fighters, no, that's not a good deal. But if I'm a promoter and I've got like a, you know, Bob Arum, he is not as big as the PBC, obviously. So if I've got like, you know, my star fighters and I say, hey, I want this fight to happen. No, I don't feel it. I only want to fight once a year or twice, you know.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, if it's a big enough fight that everyone wants to see, and the fighter can make money off it, and he still says he doesn't want it, then I mean that's partly on him too. It's like if you're going to be compensated for the risk, and you don't take the risk, and in that instance, you can kind of see the promoter side of it. I mean, he has a responsibility to deliver a decent product to the public. And if you're not allowing him to do that, then that's another story. So in that instance, you can kind of understand the promoter and why, you know, why he or she would be doing that. So.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes, man. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
It's the politics that really kill it, though. You know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll see what happens. I mean. If Bob Arum and Al Heyman can sit down and actually work something out where, okay, well, Bob says, I'll give you this, and then Heyman says, I'll give you that. But Tim Smith made a great point. He goes, you know, we've crossed – people say we don't want to work with them, but we've crossed the street. You know, John Molina, Felix Diaz, what's the other guy there? Alita Alvarez, Dominic Brazil, like they crossed the street several times, but who's crossing the street to come over to PBC? No one's ever reciprocated it. You know what I mean? So,
why do you think that is?
I have no idea. And then the argument is, well, oh, the PBC only gives them the lower level fighters. They're not going to give them the stars. Okay, well, top rank and all the other ones, no one's even given them the second tier fighters. They've sent nobody over. You know? They've sent nobody over. So why do I think that is? I think it's just the hypocrisy of Bob Arum and everybody else, you know, complaining that it's the PBC that doesn't want to work with anybody. Meanwhile, they're the ones that are, you know, what about Dominic Wade? You know, he fought Golovkin, you know, so these are guys that have come over that were PBC fighters.
Yeah.
So.
It's insane. Did you hear that Shannon Briggs
wants to come back? Yeah, I read it today.
And for a British boxing license.
Oh, so, not an American?
Yeah, so he wants to go get a British boxing license. Because I think is it a substance abuse ban or something like that? Or
PEDs
or something? Wouldn't he pop for PEDs or something?
Yeah, but I don't know how long his suspension is for. That's what I don't know.
Yeah, but I just read today that he wants to come back and apply for a British boxing license, and he wants to fight over in the UK. So my guess is that he's still suspended over here, if that's the case. You know, and I know, like, if you're suspended in, like, New York or Nevada or anything like that, pretty much if you're suspended in one commission, you're going to be suspended in all of them.
In the United States.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
But we have had, like, we actually had situations where people go overseas to fight, you know.
And you could, it's very easy to fight in Mexico. They don't... There's guys that get knocked out here and they go fight in Mexico. You know what I mean? and no one says nothing. No disrespect to Mexico, but it just is what it is.
Right. I would imagine their commission isn't the tightest.
It's the freaking wild, wild west over there, without question.
Well, they got, like, you always hear stories of, like, you know, guys in Mexico turning pro at 15, you know what I mean? And, like, stuff like that. Like, who was it? When did, like, Marquez, I thought, Chavez? Wasn't it Chavez?
Chavez senior turned pro very young. I thought he was, like, 16.
Yeah, like 16 years old or something.
How old was Canelo when he turned pro? Canelo was a youngster, too.
I thought it was 15, but I don't know.
I'll check, but I know he was a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, they start, you know, some of them guys can start, like, really young over there. Well, how old was Pacquiao when he started?
He was 18. 18, 19.
I thought he was pretty young too. I thought he was.
I'll have to double check that. I'm just guessing right now, but I know he was very young.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know like when his first pro fight was, because who knows like how many fights they've had. But then you always hear stories about where they're in you remember like the Bobby Gunn? Remember Bobby Gunn when he came on? And he was telling us about the bare knuckle fighting, and it would take place in like a warehouse somewhere.
Oh yeah.
Like nobody really knew where it was, but like a whole bunch of people knew. You know what I mean? It was secret, so you had to know somebody who knew somebody to get in. And yeah, man, that's
Pacquiao turned pro in 1995.
Wow, really? How old was he?
So he's 40 now. Okay. So what's it? 2019. Subtract 1995. That's 24 years ago. So 40 subtract 24. 16 years old.
Yeah, I thought he was young. Yeah, I thought he was young.
Jesus Christ.
Right.
How fucking nuts is that? Guy's been pro for
King Kali in the chat. Matthew Thompson just said he was 16, but King Kali said he lied about his age to fight.
Yeah.
So guys, where was his pro debut at?
Philippines. Fucking guys fighting in the fucking Philippines, bro.
Oh, my goodness. 106
pounds, 107 pounds, 107 pounds, 110 pounds, 108 pounds, 110 pounds, 109 pounds, 109 pounds, 106 pounds. This guy fought the whole year. Under like 110 pounds or less the whole year of 1995, 110 pounds or less.
That's insane.
And then in 1996 is when he started to go up to 113. Wow, this guy. Wow. So 1995, right?
Yeah.
1995 all the way up to. Let me see. 1995 to 1999. He was like 113 pounds or 114 pounds or under. So for the first 4 years of his career, he was a junior bantamweight or less. And then in December of 1999, he went up to 122. So then he started going up into the 122s. So
that's insane.
Yeah,
that's just insane, man. So he went for what? 106 pounds? He said it was his debut.
Yeah, 106 pounds. And went all the way up to 154.
Who did he fight at 154? Was that
Bob Kitch weighed 150 Margarito? But
that's what I thought.
He weighed in like friggin' still weighed in. He weighed at 144 pounds. Margarita weighed 150, so he actually entered the ring as a welterweight.
Right.
But he fought for a junior middleweight title. So.
Jeez. So on March 29th, that's I guess a couple days, so I guess Friday, Wonhang Menyothin is going to take on Tatsuya Fukuhara. It's a rematch, 12 rounds for Menyothin's WBC strawweight title.
Okay.
This is going to be in Thailand. Menyothin is what, 52-0 or something like that?
Oh, that's that guy, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's like 52-0.
Yeah.
And he's not, he's fighting good guys, and I've seen him fight before. He's fighting, he's a good fighter.
Yeah.
He's a really good fighter. Nobody, this guy is fighting on a Friday in Thailand.
Want to go?
You know what I mean? Why does nobody pick this guy up? Why doesn't,
You want to go? You want to take the Beeb Jet down?
Let's take the Beeb Jet. I like it. Go down to Thailand, man.
Just shoot down there. I haven't been down there in a long time.
Yeah, been down there for a long time. By a long time, you mean like 50 years, a long time?
I went there in my elementary school.
Yeah, I used to. That's my old stomping grounds of Thailand, you know?
That's funny.
And then, was it March 30th? We got the ESPN fights. Alexander Gvozdik versus... again, this is his name. This is how they pronounce it, how the ring announcer pronounces it, Dudu Ngumbu. 12 rounds for Vodzi. It blows me away. I have no rationale no logic on why this place, number one, takes place in Philadelphia, number one, and it takes place in 2300 Arena.
I mean, every time I think about it, I get a fucking headache. I can't make sense of it. It makes no sense.
You remember when PBC is pretty good about it now, but remember back in the day with PBC?
They were horrible about it. Oh, my God.
They used to take two guys. Like, I'll give you the perfect example was the Battle of Ohio between Sean Porter and Adrian Broner took place in Las Vegas.
Oh, my God.
That made no sense. Or they'll take, like, a hometown guy and put him somewhere else. You know, had no idea, like, how to build these guys or anything, and they've got 100 times better now. But
didn't Tim Bradley and Devin Alexander, where'd they fight? Like in Detroit or something?
Something like that. Yeah, it was another off the wall place, man. And I don't understand it. I mean, and Sonny Canto, apparently Sonny Canto is back on the card too against Omar Acosta.
Good to him, man. Good to see him jump right back into it.
Well, no, Sonny Canto, this is a second pro fight.
Oh, who's the guy?
Who was the guy that got knocked out? He was like a.
What was his name? Something Kent. Was his name Canto or Tan?
What was the guy?
I forget. I thought it began with a C too.
But he was like a lighter weight guy.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Now Reese Mack is saying the pronunciation. The announcer might be a little compelling. Yeah. Okay. The announcer might feel compelled to call him
Dudow.
Yeah, Dudow. I've heard ring announcers call him Doo-Doo, and yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, grab your toilet paper. Here comes Doo-Doo!
Now, have you seen, I've seen a little bit of him, but not enough to actually make a, you know, obviously Gvozdyk is, he's a stud at that weight. He's, you know, light heavyweight title and everything, just coming back from the Adonis Stevenson thing. And, I fully expect him to win. 2,300, what if the capacity there is only like 2,000?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I don't get it. And why is, I mean, Sonny Canto is a you know, one of those fighters. Why didn't he get any run on this card? Hopefully they show him. He's the third one down, so hopefully they show him.
Yeah.
The one I'm really excited for too is on Saturday. I think that's Saturday. Yeah, Liam Smith and Sam Eggington. That's going to be a good one. That's going to be on the Zone. And then a lot of people are making a big deal about the David Price Cash Ali fight. So I'm not that interested in that one, to be honest with you. But a lot of people are making a big deal about it. Ryan Garcia also fights this weekend versus Jose Lopez. Let's see here. And then looking ahead, there's not much next weekend either, to be honest with you. As I'm looking at the rundown here, let's see here. On UFC Fight Pass, Kareem Mayfield and Ivan Golub. And then, let's see.
Oh, it's Roy Jones. Roy Jones promotes Kareem Mayfield now or something?
Yeah, that's on April 10th. And then, of course, April 12th, we have the Lomachenko-Krawla fight. Yeah. I'm in the minority. I know I'm in the minority here. I like that fight a lot. I like Krawla a lot.
Yeah, I don't hate the fight. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
Yeah. And then Zerto Ramirez makes his, I think that's his debut at light heavyweight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, some good stuff coming up here. And then we'll see what goes on. 1,500, LDRDTB in the chat just said 1,500 is the capacity. Yeah, I know it's something around there.
Yeah, it's a real small arena.
I just don't get that, man. And he'll be on an American TV, American audience and everything like that with, you know, six people at the arena watching him, you know.
Yeah.
Do you expect that? Let me ask you this. I mean, would you? Philadelphia is a fight town, so I'm assuming it'll sell out. Do you think it sells out?
Oh, yeah.
It would be pretty embarrassing if Top Rank could sell out, 1,500, 2,000 tickets.
I mean, I'll tell you this. They'll give the tickets away just to make the arena full, because it's going to be too embarrassing.
God, you imagine.
It's going to be on television, so.
Yeah, God.
Imagine. It's not hard to give away enough tickets to fill up a 1,500 seat arena.
No, I wouldn't think. I wouldn't think so.
Want to go?
What's that?
Want to go?
Yeah, might as well. I'll be busy in Thailand that day. And then finally, let's talk about this real quick. Okay, so there's a video circulating on the internet, and you may have seen it, where Kubrat Pulev is being interviewed by this woman, and at the end of the interview, he grabs her and he kisses her and he leaves. And everybody, a lot of people went into an uproar about it and everything like that. Now, it finally came out, and the newspaper that she works for has come out with it, said that was a terrible thing to do and he shouldn't have done it. Now, it has come out. Pulev put out a statement claiming that he knows the woman and they were friends. And that he had dinner with, she came by with him and his friends later on in the evening. B, was this a big deal?
The more I think of it, it wasn't, because she didn't seem too distraught about it. She didn't seem too taken aback about it. She's a little bit surprised, but not surprised, to the point where she was upset. It was kind of like she was laughing. She thought it was funny. Did it look inappropriate? Did it look out of place? From my vantage point, yes. But it's up to her to handle it the way she wants to handle it. So since she's not complaining about it, she's not, going out there and saying that this guy should be punished for sexual assault, she's not filing any charges, then I have no problem just letting it go. But I don't think that's something he should be continuing to do in front of a camera when he's being interviewed. I don't think it's appropriate.
Right.
But is it, but it's up to her to determine what she wants to do. And if she, apparently they know each other. I mean, there is some type of friendship or some type of acquaintance relationship there. And just judging by the way the whole thing came off, you could tell they knew each other and they had like a, kind of a sort of friendly, I'm not saying it was a sexual relationship, but they have kind of a friendly relationship. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you don't kiss your friend like that on the lips, though. Like, I have friends, I have women that I talk to, and I, I don't maybe give them a hug or something, but I don't kiss them on the lips like that.
Well, you're not really alpha either. I mean, usually alpha guys do that, right?
Well, I'm super alpha. They created a new status for me. It's called Beeb Super Alpha Status. I had girls do that to me before, but I don't do it to them, is what I'm trying to say.
I tell you what, yeah, I don't think that it's something he should do. If I'm his publicist, I don't care who he knows, who's friends with him, whatever. I tell him, I pull him aside and say, don't you ever do that again.
Yeah.
It's just a bad look.
Well,
even if you did know her, clearly it took her by surprise. I mean, well, you can look at the video and see clearly it took her by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, nobody knows that you know her either.
Right.
So let me ask you this now. Wasn't he in trouble for assault in another situation too? Was that him?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm trying to remember. I thought, wasn't he charged with something, or so the allegations against him about assault, sexual assault?
Mm-hmm.
Was that him?
That I don't know.
Anyone in the chat, do you guys remember that? Am I wrong here, or I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I thought it was him.
Mm-hmm. That's it. But you know the other.
Oh,
thing,
no,
too,
no,
was
no. That was Kovalev. That was Kovalev. I'm sorry.
That was Kovalev. Oh yeah. That's right. That's right.
I sincerely apologize, Mr. Pulev.
Yeah.
That was Kovalev. I'm sorry.
And a lot of people, when they saw her reaction, say, "Well, she didn't look like she minded it." Well, on the flip side of that, what is she supposed to do? She's in front of camera, she's trying to give an interview, and she's going to have to maintain composure. She acted the right way. I mean, you know, so there's, I mean, a lot of people, but, you know, a lot of people get that done, you know, see that happen and they're like, well, she didn't mind. Well, maybe she did. You don't know. She's got to maintain a decorum for the camera and everything like that.
Maybe she didn't want to make a scene, you know.
Well, that's the thing, man. Yeah, what is she supposed to do? I mean, at that point, you know, she's just got to laugh it off and go forward. And, you know, I mean, and you have to, you know, try to maintain some kind of composure there, you know.
Do you remember that blonde woman on Fox, that commentator that was at the NASCAR event, and 50 Cent tried to kiss her and she turned away and didn't let him kiss her?
Vaguely, yeah.
I forget what her name was, but that was so awkward.
Yeah,
that was so awkward. 50 Cent looked like looked like he got played out a little bit.
Yeah, well, you remember the Joe Namath thing? Do you remember that with Joe Namath when he was just blasted at one of those college games, and one of the ESPN reporters was trying to interview him and trying to do like a professional interview with him, and he looks at her, he's like, "God, you're so beautiful." He's like, "I want to kiss you," and he got real close to her, and she was just like. And again, she was like laughing it off and everything like that. Again, trying to do her job, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, man. It's just a horrible. Even if you did, you know, if you didn't know her, that's horrible. You know, you can't just do that to somebody. But if you did know her, it's just not a good look, man. That's just,
no.
I mean, from a PR standpoint, if I'm this PR guy, I'm like. Shellacking him the next day, like, what is wrong with you? You know, what are you stupid? What's wrong with you? Because you know there's gonna be backlash from it. You know.
Yeah.
Was it Aaron Andrews was the one he tried to kiss?
Yeah, it was Aaron Andrews. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Jeez. Insane. All right, guys, I think that's going to do it for this edition, this Wednesday special edition of Ringside Reporter. Stay tuned. If news breaks, we'll come in between now and Sunday. Otherwise, we will catch you guys on Sunday.
Peace out, guys.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to a very special Wednesday edition of Ringside Reporter. Today, we're going to talk about David Benavidez and Anthony Durrell. Listen, guys, the fight has been ordered by the WBC. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean anything? Is the fight going to happen? Well, we'll let you know. But first, as promised, and we've been talking about this for about a week now, I'm very excited about this. I know Beeb's very excited. I want to bring on Tommy Duquette of Hixo and Fight Camp, all right? And they